This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our 60 minutes of old-time radio crime begins with the FBI in Peace and War. We'll hear their story, The Solid Citizen, from October 15th, 1952. That's followed by The Silent Men and The Big Sneak, their story from October 14th, 1951.
The FBI in Peace and War. The FBI in Peace and War. Brought to you by Chesterfield, the only cigarette to give smokers premium quality in both regular and king size. Buy 'em either way you like 'em. Premium quality and much milder Chesterfield. And Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor. And Beeman's Pepsi, tastes so good and aids digestion too. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, The Solid Citizen.
Shepard speaking.
Mr. Shepard, I have a call for you. Mr. Wyatt of the United States Attorney's Office.
Oh, thanks. Put him on.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Shep.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm not sure. I've just come from a conference on Paul Bradley, Shep. If your evidence is sufficient, we're going to charge murder.
That's a large order.
Yes, I know.
How soon do you need an answer?
Well, how soon can you give us one?
A couple of hours?
Fine. I'll be waiting to hear from you. Thanks, Shep. I know it's a large order, but we do need your testimony.
I'll call you, Ben.
Right. So long, Shep.
Goodbye, Ben.
So?
They're going to charge murder if our evidence is strong enough.
They want us to testify.
Yeah, that's why I wanted you in here. Mr. Andrews wants us to be up on every angle in this case.
Murder? That's not going to be easy to substantiate.
No, that's why we've got to understand every move right from scratch. Cigarette?
No, thanks. From scratch, huh? That was,
About a year ago, November 1951.
Is that when he issued the first phony loan?
No, he'd been doing that for a few months. November was when it began catching up to him.
Motivation?
The usual.
Debts?
No.
The races?
No.
Women?
Well, one woman. Pretty remarkable one at that.
It's funny, isn't it, Shep? Here's a man of high standing in the community. He has an excellent job, a fine reputation. He has a lovely wife and two children. A solid citizen, if there ever was one. And yet...
Well, let's look at it from that angle. For several years prior to November 1951, that's the way it was. Walt Bradley's a solid citizen. At home, he gets along splendidly with his family and with his neighbors. The bank, he's been made a vice president in charge of the personal loan department. Everything proceeding along the lines of a well-rounded, gratifying, and happy life. Of course, that's the way it appears on the surface. Go beneath and we find a different story. This is the time, we can figure roughly, when Bradley is first beginning to get worried about his banking activities. The time when he picks up his office phone and calls Anthony Servo at the Dixon Hotel.
Yeah.
Hello, Tony. This is Paul Bradley speaking.
Yeah, Mr. Bradley. What can I do for you?
I want to talk to you, Tony. It's important.
Well, look, I was kind of planning on the races this afternoon.
Never mind the races. This is important. You stay there in the hotel. I'm coming right over.
Now, relax, Bradley. For the love of Mike, take it easy, will you? What are you getting in such a heat for?
Well, I told you, Tony.
Sure, you told me. Your boss thinks you're wonderful. Your department's doing tops at the bank. Is that something to get in a heat about?
Yes, it is. That's just it. Mr. Franklin's taking notice of me, and I don't like that. I don't like it one bit.
You don't, huh? You know, for a guy in your position, you got a lot of likes and don't likes, Bradley. Maybe you don't like the bucks that we're splitting in this deal either.
I never said I didn't like the money, Tony. I'm only pointing out...
Okay, you already pointed. Now skip it. Here, take a drink. Pull yourself together.
All right. Maybe I need one.
Sure you do. Trouble with you striped pants boys, you can't look a dishonest dollar in the face.
Well, if I were only certain that Mr. Franklin wasn't onto anything...
Well, how could he be? There isn't a chance of him or anybody else ever finding out those loans of Tony.
I don't know.
I do. Here, drink this.
I wish I was assured.
Drink it! Look, Bradley, do I got to draw this for you on a blackboard? You're the head of the department, aren't you?
Yes.
You're selling money to bank lends, right?
That's right.
So who could figure you making loans to people who don't exist? We fix a credit reference, don't we?
You'd better let me have another drink.
Sure. Now, we don't ask for too much. 700 here, 1,000 there.
I guess you're right at that, Tony.
Of course I'm right. All we got to do is to keep paying the interest on time and take in the cash. Here.
Thanks.
I tell you, it's airtight, Bradley. If your boss ever suspects something, you think he'd let you stay on in your spot?
No, I guess you're right.
Sure. You just take this new batch of names I worked out.
Oh, look, hadn't we better wait a few days?
You know, I got a real talent for inventing phony names. How do you like this? Lester Gorey, plumbing contractor. Raymond Tanning, a menswear. Fancy, huh?
Yes, they're fine, Tony, but
Lester
can't we...
Lester Gorey's a borrowing 800, Tanning 75. Here you are. And, Bradley.
Yes?
That secretary of yours.
Amy?
Yeah. She's the only one who could smell a rat. If she had.
Relax, will you? I'll handle Amy.
Hey, look at who's telling who to relax.
All right. Okay.
You feel better now, huh, Bradley?
Sure, sure. I feel all right.
Now you stop all this worry. We're going to clean up big just to keep remembering that.
All right, Tony. I'll remember.
Like I say, it's airtight. You make out the checks, I cash them. It can't miss.
Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields. First such report published about any cigarette.
A responsible consulting organization reports a study by a competent medical specialist and staff on the effects of smoking Chesterfields. For 6 months, a group of men and women smoked only Chesterfield, 10 to 40 a day, their normal amount. 45% of the group have smoked Chesterfields from 1 to 30 years, for an average of 10 years each. At the beginning and end of the 6 months, each smoker was given a thorough examination, including x-rays, and covering the sinuses, nose, ears, and throat. After these examinations, the medical specialist stated,
"It is my opinion that the ears, nose, throat, and accessory organs of all participating subjects examined by me were not adversely affected in the 6 months period by smoking the cigarettes provided."
Remember this report and buy Chesterfields, regular or king size. Premium quality Chesterfield. Much milder.
And now, Act Two of tonight's story on the FBI and Peace and War, The Solid Citizen.
And Tony Servo tells Bradley to stop worrying. The scheme can't miss. And it doesn't. The loans go through without a hitch. Bradley splitting the returns with Tony. 3 months have gone by, and he's made himself a tidy sum in addition to his salary at the office. And everything is proceeding smoothly there, just as Tony said.
Hello, Mr. Bradley.
Well, you still working, Amy? Did you go to lunch yet?
I wanted to finish up this work first. I've got these repayment books ready when you want to see them, and Miss Stevens is in your office.
Oh? How long has she been here?
Oh, I don't know, about half an hour. Oh, and here are the checks for these new loans, Lester Gowrie and Raymond Tanning.
They came through, eh?
Mm-hmm, from the main office. I'm all set to mail them out.
Well, Amy, I don't want to mail these checks out just yet. I want to look these over first.
Oh, of course. I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Bradley. I should have asked you first.
No, that's all right. I just want to attend to them myself.
You certainly give personal service, Mr. Bradley.
Well, I aim to. After all, that's the way to build goodwill in this business. Oh, and no calls until I'm through with Miss Stevens, Amy. Hello, Joan.
My, how serious we are this morning.
It's afternoon, and I thought I told you...
Never to come here to the office. Oh, darling, I miss you too much.
Uh-huh.
Don't be cross with me, Paul. Just kiss me and tell me that you're crazy about me, and I shall leave without a murmur.
Oh, Joan.
Kiss me?
Darling, I...
Never to come to your office, never call you at home. It isn't fair.
I know.
It just isn't fair. Besides, I wanted to show you my new outfit. Do you like it, Paul?
It's lovely.
Isn't it? Oh, darling, I'm so glad that you like it. Now, if you just write out a check...
Oh, Joan.
Well... They don't give clothes like this away for nothing, Paul.
But it's the third outfit you've bought this week. Now, Joan, please.
Well, really, Paul, I do want to look nice. After all, your wife has all the
clothes. Leave Helen out of this.
Well, I only...
I said leave her out.
Very well, Paul.
I'm sorry.
Are you? I wonder.
A check for how much?
Maybe you'd rather leave me out, Paul.
Now, Joan.
Well, if you would, all you have to do is to say so.
Don't talk that way. You know how I feel.
Do I?
You know only too well. 500? Will that be all right?
Just right, darling.
All right. There you are.
Oh, thank you, Paul. You are sweet. I'll be seeing you tonight?
Yes, of course.
We'll make it an evening.
And you'd better go now, Joan.
Oh?
I have a lot of work to do.
Oh, of course, darling. How thoughtless of me. And that's one thing I never want to interfere with, Paul. Your work.
And because of his attachment to the woman Joan Stevens, Bradley carries on with his work at the office, as well as his scheme with Tony Servo. Meantime, you remember, we're carrying on with that little work of our own. And during the course of it, a lead turns up when Inspector Martinson of the Philadelphia Police comes to our office. Inspector, would you show that picture to Dave?
Sure. There it is, Mr. Reynolds.
So, it's Tony Servo. Last time I saw his picture, he was in Leavenworth.
Well, I'm sorry to say he's one of our citizens now.
What does he call himself these days, Inspector?
He's back to Tony Servo. But he's gone through at least a dozen other handles in between. And the strange part of it is that he's right out in the open now, all of a sudden. A couple of days ago, he opened an account in a local bank for
$15,000. $15,000? Servo having that kind of money all of a sudden is very interesting.
Uh-huh, and putting it into a bank account's even more interesting. Has he given himself a title, Inspector?
Well, the money is banked under the name of Anthony Servo, president of something called the S&B Operating Company.
S&B Operating Company, huh? Well, you can bet that's a build-up for something soft, and we better find out what it is. Dave, we're heading for Philadelphia first thing in the morning.
Right, Shep.
Inspector, we can count on you for a couple of extra men, can't we?
By all means, Mr. Shepard. The department's at your disposal.
Good. We can let Servo have plenty of line at first. But we're going to find out where that bank account came from, Dave, and just who the S&B Operating Company is operating on.
Here you are, Bradley. Three more names. Robert Hagen, accountant. Philip Newbold, the pharmacist. Ella Benedict, researcher consultant.
Paul?
Yes, Ellen?
There's a young lady outside from the bank. She says it's important she sees you.
Oh?
I asked her to wait in the study.
Well, thank you, dear.
You won't be long, Paul. Dinner will be ready any minute.
I'm sure this won't take long, Helen. Well, Amy.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bradley. I'm sorry to break in on you this way. I wouldn't if it wasn't important.
That's quite all right. Sit down, won't you? Can I fix you something to drink?
Oh, no, really. I couldn't.
Well, all right, then. What is it, Amy, that's so important?
It's this check, Mr. Bradley.
Oh, Ella Benedict. $800. Oh, yes. This has come through, has it?
It came through this afternoon after you left the office. And I, Well, you always take such pains to attend to things personally, so I took it with me to deliver myself on my way home.
Oh? You delivered it?
Well, I tried to, but I couldn't find any Ella Benedict at the address.
Well, you couldn't?
No, sir.
Well, they could have given us the wrong address at the main office.
Well, I checked our files. That address was on Mrs. Benedict's application.
Oh, it was?
Yes, sir. I even called up the people she gave as business references. And, Mr. Bradley, there just aren't any such people to be found. Not one.
Well, I...
There's something very wrong about this, Mr. Bradley.
You think so, Amy?
Well, there must be. We'd better call the police right away.
No, Amy, I don't think we'd better do that yet.
But,
Now, you haven't told anyone about this, have you?
Of course not, Mr. Bradley. Soon as I had the facts, I came straight to you.
Well, that was very wise, Amy. This could be a serious thing. You realize that?
Well, of course I do.
Most serious. I mean, if someone in my department is making false loans, well, we... Amy...
Yes, sir?
I want you to do something for me.
Certainly, Mr. Bradley.
I want you to keep this strictly to yourself until I have time to explore it fully. It would be very bad for the bank if this sort of publicity leaked out.
But...
And quite frankly, Amy, it would be very bad for me.
It would?
I'm afraid so. You know how these things go.
Now, will you do that for me, Amy? Keep this to yourself.
Why, of course, Mr. Bradley. I'll do anything you say.
And on the evening of January 24th, 1952, Paul Bradley's little scheme starts to disintegrate. His secretary, Amy Wharton, has accidentally discovered the first discrepancy, and only loyalty to him prevents her disclosing it right now. The solid citizen is getting shaky at the seams, and he knows that something must be done. He makes another visit to Anthony Servo at the Dixon Hotel. Servo agrees with Bradley that something must be done, but Bradley disagrees with Servo on just what this something is.
Are you crazy?
Sure, like a fox, maybe.
Can't you get it through your head? Amy knows that last loan was a phony.
All the more reason not to wait for the next one.
Drink? No, and you've had enough to drink.
It's perfect, Bradley. I got $15,000 in the bank. With a credit rating like that, the loan will go through easy.
Now, Tony, we...
$10,000 cash. Five for each of us. That's a nice last haul, brother.
And what about Amy?
You bought time for us, didn't you? She won't do a thing until you said a word. Said so yourself.
I'm not going to do it, Tony. That's final. I don't like any part of it.
There you go again with those dumb lies. I told you, for a guy in your position, you got too many of them. You got to look at it practical, brother. You're a big man. And A1 respectable type. How would it be if it got out of you was mixed up with phony loans?
It won't get out. I can handle Amy.
Well, sure you can. You can handle Amy, brother. Question is, can you handle me? You...
What?
You want to have a drink? Very well. I'll have one with you. What time are you joining Miss Stevens? I pay my respects.
You never mind Miss Stevens. She's not interested in your respects.
Oh, no?
No. I'm walking out of here, Tony. And I'm not coming back.
Miss Stevens is not interested, eh?
No, and neither am I. Where we're having cocktails, they don't allow cheap two-bit hoodlums to
bargain. Now, wait a minute.
You stay away from me from here in, Tony. You stay away or I'll...
You what?
Let go of me, Tony.
You crummy phony. I ought to...
I said let go.
You're too good for me, huh? You and Miss Stevens.
Tony.
Well, she's not too good till she gets a cut from this job. I can promise you that.
Her what?
Her cut. You heard it plain enough. Half for everything I get, same as always.
Tony, what are you saying?
You middle-aged pot-belly fool. Who do you think put the squeeze on you for presents before you pull the first phony loan? Who kept after
you? You're lying, Tony.
Yeah? Ask her where she goes when you go home to your ever-loving wife.
You're lying.
Stupid hoodlum, huh? Anytime that's a better than a high-priced sucker.
Tony, she isn't in on this. You're only saying
Listen,
that.
Listen, Bradley, and get this straight. Johnny's in on it, and so am I, and so are you. We're pulling this last loan, and you're swinging it for us. You haven't any choice in this deal.
For breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Dentine tastes so good.
Dentine freshens your breath.
Dentine helps keep your teeth sparkling clean and white.
Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Before you go out and always after eating, drinking, smoking, refresh your breath with Dentine. You'll love Dentine chewing gum, for Dentine has a wonderful, tingling, nippy flavor that lingers on and on. It's delicious. And remember, Dentine helps keep your teeth white, too. Keep Dentine handy. You'll enjoy refreshing your breath when you chew Dentine. So, for breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
And now, Act 3 of tonight's story on the FBI in Peace and War, The Solid Citizen. And now, Bradley's really had it. If he was in a tough spot before, this new turn leaves him in an all but unbearable position. Disclosure threatens from one side, Tony Servo from the other. And our solid citizen is right in the middle. What'll he do? Well, as time runs by and the pressure tightens, if... Shepard.
Shep, this is Marty Enright in the lab.
Oh, yes, Marty. Find anything?
We just blew up the pictures on those fingerprints, Shep. They're identical.
They are. Well, that's fine, Marty. That's a big help.
Anything more I can do?
Not at the moment. I'll let you know. Thanks, Marty. Thanks a lot.
Anytime, Shep. That's what we're here for.
The prints match?
Yep. We can definitely establish Servo was in her apartment last evening.
Then Servo's been lying.
I don't think so. But we still have the conflicting story.
His and Bradley's.
Yeah. When Inspector Martinson picked Tony up, he was very belligerent. But when he heard what had happened, he opened up wide. Admitted his part in the loan fraud, but swore he had nothing to do with the killing.
And Bradley?
He's still pretty confused that everything fits.
You're convinced he's the one?
Well, look at the facts. He had the provocation, he had the access. Why, even the switchboard girl at the hotel identified his voice as the man who reported the killing.
All right.
Well, put yourself in his place, Dave. He's the man in the middle of an impossible situation. Not only does he find out that he must proceed with the fraudulent loan scheme, but he also learns that the woman he's been selling his soul for is a double-crossing Confederate. So this is the time we can figure that Bradley's living through an agony of indecision. His secretary's been forcing the issue at the office, and Tony Servo's been doing the same at his home.
Almost 48 hours, Bradley, and I'm still waiting.
Tony,
Tomorrow. I'm giving you until tomorrow to put that loan through.
Look, I've got to go back to dinner, Tony.
Just remember what I said. Tomorrow, Bradley. If it don't come through then, I'll come around to the bank and take care of it. Personal.
And I told the Carters, I said, well, if Paul isn't off on one of those business trips of his, we'd love to come for the weekend. And Maud said...
Helen, for the love of heaven, stop babbling, will you?
Paul.
I'm sorry, dear. I guess my nerves are on edge.
Of course they are. I know how it is with all this extra work lately. Paul.
Yes.
There's something wrong, isn't there?
Yes, Helen.
You can't tell me what.
No, Helen. You see,
It's all right, dear. You don't have to explain.
There's nothing to explain. If it's nothing that concerns you, really,
Paul, it's all right. If you can't, tell me you can't. More coffee?
No more.
Are you going out again tonight?
Yes, there's something I have to clean up.
Uh-huh. Paul.
Yes?
A wife can sometimes be more than a decoration around the house. If there's any way I can help.
Thanks, Helen. But I don't think there is any way out of this. I'm in too deep. There's no way out of this one.
What? Paul!
Hello, Joan.
What brings you here at this hour?
I couldn't sleep. How about you?
Oh, it's too early to sleep. I was having a nightcap and listening to that. I fix you a drink?
No drink. Mind if I turn it off?
Oh, I thought you liked music.
It's the wrong kind. That tune is for a beginning. Wrong kind for an ending.
Ending? What are you talking about?
Oh, he hasn't told you yet, huh? I didn't think he'd have the nerve once he sobered up.
He?
Yes, he. Tony Servo. He didn't have the nerve.
Tony? Who's Tony?
Now, really, Joan, you're not going to play dumb with me, are you?
Paul, if you came over here to make trouble...
You got it. That's just what I came for. Let's level, Joan. Just for once, let's level. You've been in with Servo right along, haven't you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure you do. You know. You were probably waiting for him now. Or maybe he's here already.
Really, I fail to find this amusing.
I'll bet you do.
Well, I think you better leave.
I think maybe not.
If you don't, I will.
Oh, you're leaving. All right. Only not exactly the way you think.
Just what is that supposed to mean?
Just what it sounds like.
Paul.
What is the phrase for it? Kill two birds with one stone, isn't it? Two. You and Tony Servo. Only difference is, this isn't a stone.
Put that gun down, Paul.
And it's so perfectly set up, too. Like a plot over the radio.
Paul.
We always took such pains that no one would see me coming here. Didn't we, Joe? They'll never suspect me. Only Tony.
I see. You have this all worked out.
Yes. Right up to the electric chair.
Tony will talk.
Oh, now we know Tony,
He'll
do we?
He'll fill the works. You, me, the loans, everything.
Yes, he will. But I don't think they'll listen. An ex-convict's word against the eminent Paul Bradley's? No, I really don't think so.
Put that gun down, Paul.
I was crazy, wasn't I? Right out of my head. I had everything in life that a man could want. Money, good position, a fine family. And I gave that all up. I shoved it right down the drain for a cheap little two-timer like you.
You never thought I was cheap before.
I do now.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm still the same as I was, and so are you.
No, you're wrong, Joan. I'm different. I'm so different, you'd never know me.
I know you. If I went up close to you now, if I did, it would be just like it always was. And if I asked you to kiss me...
Don't try it, Joan.
If I asked you to, you wouldn't hold back. You couldn't.
Don't try.
Different. You'll never be different.
Stay where you are, Joan. I mean it.
Still the same, darling. Why fight?
Don't do it.
Why? Oh, kiss me, Paul. Kiss me and then tell me. Paul.
I said you were leaving, Joan. I told you. Everything in life a man could want. And I gave it all up for you.
On the basis of evidence supplied by your Federal Bureau of Investigation, Paul Bradley was indicted for the murder of Joan Stevens. Soon after, during his trial and at the repeated urgings of his wife, he made a complete statement of his guilt. He was sentenced to a term of life imprisonment. Anthony Servo, though cleared of complicity in the murder act, was found guilty for his part in the loan fraud and was sent to prison for 8 years. Thus, the files were closed on an ex-convict, his lovely confederate, and the solid citizen.
Thanks to the magic of radio, CBS Radio to be exact, you can try your hand at solving a murder. You can go to sea with the hardy sailor man of the Napoleonic Wars. And you can also shoot it out with frontier desperados in the days of the Old West. All on one safe and exciting evening. How to accomplish all this? Well, just tune in CBS Radio this Friday night and hear Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, taking on his latest case with you as his armchair assistant. And keep tuned for Michael Redgrave in the role of Horatio Hornblower, taking you back to the days when life was cheap and romance very dear. And then, to keep your evening stimulating, you can join United States Marshal Mark Dillon on his tour of duty in Dodge City of Old, battling out with the outlaws on Gunsmoke. Yes, every Friday on most of these same stations, you can enjoy them all. Mr. Keene, Horatio Hornblower, Gunsmoke, for three kinds of action, adventure, and excitement. The stars of tonight's FBI in Peace and War in just a moment. In tonight's story, Walter Grisey played the part of Paul Bradley. Harold Huber was Anthony Servo. The radio dramatizations for the FBI in Peace and War are written by Louis Pelletier and Jack Fink. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on this program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War, and is not an official program of the FBI. The FBI in Peace and War, brought to you by Chesterfield, the only cigarette to give smokers premium quality in both regular and king size. King size Chesterfields contain tobaccos of better quality and higher price than any other king-size cigarette. And Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, and Beeman's Pepsin, tastes so good and aids digestion, too. Again, we want to remind you to be sure to listen to next Wednesday's story, The Card Game, on the FBI in Peace and War. Same time, same station. This is the CBS Radio Network.
by transcription. It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Every night is Mystery Night here on NBC. Tonight's mystery feature is The Silent Men. Tomorrow evening, join Herbert Marshall as The Man Called X. On Tuesday, hear the pulsing excitement of Big Town. Then on Wednesday, there's The Big Story, Authentic Adventures of Ace Newspaper Men. And later Wednesday evening, there's the new Barry Crane, Confidential Investigator, played by William Gargan. Yes, for high adventure on a mystery feature every evening, Monday through Friday, tune into this NBC station. And now it's The Silent Men on your NBC station.
This is Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. In a moment, it will be my pleasure to introduce to you stories of the Silent Men, the special agents of federal law enforcement who silently and for little material reward daily risk their lives to protect the lives of all of us. Their tradition is long and proud, yet to guard our welfare and our liberties, they must remain nameless. The Silent Men.
Produced in Hollywood and starring Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. The National Broadcasting Company proudly presents The Silent Men, transcribed stories of the undercover operations of the special agents of every branch of our federal government and their relentless fight against crime. Now here again is Douglas Fairbanks.
Part of America's greatness is in its willingness and ability to open its doors and welcome new citizens from all parts of the world, the desirable aliens from other lands, whether they be peasants or scientists, poets or potters. They add richness to our culture. They give love and devotion to our soil. But not all aliens are desirable. They come here on trial. Most of them prove themselves worthy and they stay. Some must inevitably be sent back because they're a threat to our freedom, our institutions, our beliefs. Among the silent men who work as our sentinels are the men of the Immigration Department. Tonight, I will play the role of Special Agent George Spencer, one of the silent men in tonight's file case, The Big Sneak.
Good morning. May I help you?
I'm George Spencer, Boston Division.
Oh, yes. Mr. Tremaine is expecting you. Mr. Spencer's here, sir.
Good. Send him in. And hold all phone calls from now on, please.
Go right in, Mr. Spencer.
Thanks.
Good. Well, come in. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Chief.
Sit down. Tell me, how's the wife and George Jr.?
Huh? Oh, Lillian's fine. George Jr.'s getting open spaces where his teeth used to be.
Kids sure look like monsters from time to time, don't they?
Yeah, certainly do. But you didn't call me to Washington to talk about Junior's teeth, I'll bet.
No, I didn't, George. I wish that was the reason, though. Miss Walsh.
Yes, sir?
Bring in the dossier on Frankie Orlando.
Yes, sir.
Orlando.
You remember the name, huh?
Yeah, not with pleasure. Admitted to the United States under the quota of 1928. Arrests and conviction for bootlegging, dope, white slavery, manslaughter. Served time in Denimore and Alcatraz. Deported to Italy in 1946.
You have a good memory. I say we don't need the dossier.
The Orlando file.
No, just put it there, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, what makes Orlando a problem? He's out of our territory now. Living in Sicily, isn't he?
He's getting lonesome for us, George.
Oh, I see.
The boys from Treasury picked up one of his old mob on a counterfeit push a few days ago. A three-time loser. He tried to buy his way out of a life rap by giving a little information. Orlando's going to try to pull a big sneak, George.
Illegal entry, huh?
It's the only way he can get in. We wouldn't give him a 10-minute visa for a visit to Hoboken.
You know what port he's going to try to clear?
No. You know what it means if he gets back?
Well, the old mob reorganized, his old rackets opened up again.
Happy picture, isn't it?
Yeah, delightful. He could cross from Mexico like a wetback, slip in from Canada.
Or even clear a port with phony papers. He's got a lot of connections, George. He's a sharpshooter and he knows all the angles. Once he gets in, we'll have a job finding him. Took us almost 6 years the last time.
Well, we've got to know where and how he intends to come in.
Well, whatever it is, it'll be smart. We wait for him to come to us, we're dead. You The only way to stop him is to go to him. Watch him all the way.
You want me to go to Sicily?
Yes. As a matter of fact, George, you're booked out on a night flight to Rome. You won't even have time to go home.
Well, how about cover credentials?
I'm having those drawn up. You keep your own name. You know quite a bit about art, don't you? Painting?
Yes. You might even say I'm a collector, junior grade. On my salary, all I can afford is reproduction.
Yes, I know what you mean. Now, when you get to Italy, pose as an art dealer from Boston.
I don't speak Italian, you know.
You won't be alone. I'm bringing Tony Curto in from San Francisco. He'll be here this afternoon. You'll travel together. When you get to Palermo, check in at the Vittoria. And after that, it's up to you. Frankie Orlando is an undesirable. We don't want him here. You're the lock on the gate. Now, keep it locked.
I'll try.
Well, good luck, George.
Thanks.
I don't suppose I have to remind you Orlando was an old liner in the Mafia.
I know.
If he knows you're in his way, he'll try to kill you.
Still reading?
Curto? Oh, yes, yes. Studying up on Sicilian art, just in case. Our cover credentials won't do much good unless we know what we're talking about.
They aren't going to be any good anyhow, George.
Why, what's the matter?
I was just down at the lounge. We're tagged.
Who?
Big Joe Giovanni.
I didn't see him get on the plane.
He's on. He has his seat back by the tail section.
He see you?
Saw both of us, I'm afraid.
Well, I know him from his pictures, but he doesn't know me.
He knows me.
How?
I testified against him once at a deportation hearing. We couldn't make it stick.
Any link between Giovanni and Orlando?
Both mafia mobsters. It's a cinch they work together.
Well, that doesn't mean he knows what we're on.
No, maybe I'd better move to another seat. Maybe we better split up.
No, if he doesn't know me, our sitting together could be accidental. But if he saw us together when he came aboard, it'd look funny if we split.
No, I guess you're right.
Attention, passengers. Those are the Italian Alps we now pass over. Thank you.
Well, we're getting there. Know where Giovanni came from originally, his place of birth?
Let me see. Oh, yeah, Naples.
Yeah, well, he might be just taking a trip, visit the home folks or something.
Could be. But on the other hand, he may be a contact for Orlando. If he's in on the sneak, we're in trouble.
Well, we can find out. Stewardess. Stewardess.
Can I get you something, Mr. Simpson?
Yes. Mr. Curto and I were wondering about something. Is there a Joe Giovanni on the passenger list?
Seat 37. He's listed as Giuseppe Giovanni.
Ah.
Funny you should ask about him.
Why funny?
Well, a few minutes after we took off, he asked who you were.
Oh, I see.
He asked about me, too?
No, Mr. Curto. He just seemed to be interested in Mr. Spencer. Is there anything else?
What's Giovanni's destination? Naples?
Well, I'd have to look it up on my seating chart, but... No, I don't think so. I think he has a through ticket to Palermo, Sicily.
Giovanni had us tagged all right. I could feel his eye on us when we changed planes at Rome and switched the shuttle to Naples and Palermo. He got off the plane at the Naples stop and sent a cable. He came back smiling. When we finally landed at Palermo, he moved close to us while we were waiting for our luggage.
Let me offer you a lift into the city, gentlemen. I got a car outside. The limousine.
No thanks, Mr. Giovanni.
Why not? After all, I'm not a stranger. Not your friend, Mr. Curto.
Don't be so polite, Giovanni. On you, it doesn't look good.
I just offered to save you the price of a taxi, Curto.
I'd rather pay it. I like fresh air when I ride.
They're taking our bags off the hand truck now, Curto.
I'll get them. Your friend is a difficult man, Mr. Spencer.
Oh, don't let it worry you. He's had a hard life.
You think that's funny, eh?
What do you think?
I think maybe you and him could smarten up. You're a nice-looking guy, culture and everything. But how much you got in your pocket?
Oh, enough for tomorrow's breakfast.
What kind of breakfast, big shot? Don't mean... Stop being so smart. Be a little dumb like me. I'll let you in on a good thing.
Like what?
I'll be getting a big vacation. All over Europe. First class. All expenses paid.
Paid by who?
By me. Big Joe Giovanni.
I got the bags, George.
Throw them away, Curto. We're going to buy new ones and go on a big vacation. All expenses paid, courtesy of Big Joe Giovanni.
Oh, isn't that nice?
You're two bright kids, You're like big laughs.
Yeah. And you're the biggest laugh we've had in years.
Let me tell you something, Curto. You push me around in the States, but you're not in the States now. I can push back hard.
You're an Italian boy yourself. You know what I mean.
Get lost, Giovanni. Take it easy, Colonel.
Arrivederci, gentlemen. I give you regards to the statue. You'll never see when I go back. Too bad she won't see you no more.
I don't think Mr. Giovanni likes this, Curto.
We got a bad break bumping into him.
No, not too bad. He told us something.
You mean that free vacation pitch?
Yeah. Pick up the bags and let's get out of here.
Right.
Giovanni's got a clear passport. We've got nothing on him. Why should he offer us a bribe?
Well, he doesn't want us around, I figure.
Well, that means the lead we got from the Treasury Department was right. He's no reason to get rid of us on his own account. He just doesn't want anybody around here watching Frankie Orlando.
I can't figure how they plan to get Orlando back into the States. But whatever it is, Giovanni's in on the sneak, all right.
No airport, a city bus here?
No, they got one. It's probably broken down someplace. There's a cab.
Hello. No, sir, senor.
Climb in, George.
Well, that's a poor but honest substitute for Giovanni's limousine.
Yeah. Well, chiamiamo Albergo Vittoria.
Subito, signore, subito.
You know, George, Giovanni was right about one thing. This isn't the States. Whatever we're going up against, we can't yell for help.
I've never seen you worried before, Curto.
My old man was born here. I remember all the stories I heard when I was a kid. You notice that gesture Giovanni made with his hand when he left us?
Yeah, when he put his hand to his mouth and bit the knuckle of one of his fingers?
Yeah. That's the vendetta sign. It's like a promise, an oath. Maybe he won't succeed, George, but Giovanni is mafia. Before we leave this island, he'll try to kill us.
Now, when he does try, we'll be getting close to Frankie Orlando.
We're already closer than he wants us to get. Keep an eye on the rear window. Next time we see Giovanni in his limousine, he won't be inviting us to ride with him.
This town's bigger than I thought.
Big enough.
You know where we are?
Well, we came into town through Puerto Nueva, and now we're on the Via Maqueda, almost midtown. Quattro Cantoni is about a half a mile from here. That's the heart of the city.
Well, this looks like a shopping district through here.
It is.
Well, it's kind of quiet, isn't it?
It's after midnight. Plane landed a little late. We should...
What's he stopping for?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Perché fermate aquí?
Non ci ho più benzina.
Oh,
man.
What's the matter?
Out of gas. At least that's what he says. Pull the bags out. We can walk the rest of the way.
Well, looks like we'll have to.
Not far. One long block to Quattro Cantoni. Hotel is right off the square.
Well, as long as Giovanni and his friends aren't around, let's go.
Yeah. Wait till I pay this guy.
Hey, you. Grazie. Oh, grazie, signore.
That's what I was afraid you'd say. Come on.
Arrivederci, signore. Arrivederci.
What's the matter, Curto?
That cab driver's a bad actor, that's all. He dumped us out here because somebody wanted us dumped here.
How do you know?
Because I shortchanged him on the fare and he thanked me. If he was on the level, he'd scream like an eagle. Let's get off this block. It's too long and there's no cover.
I was about to ask him why we needed cover, but before I could get the question out, I knew. From not far off, I heard the sound of a large car moving slowly in low gear. Curto heard it, too. The direction of sound is hard to place in the dark. We looked both ways, up and down the street. Then we saw it.
Coming from behind us on the far side of the street.
No headlights. Moving slowly.
Moving faster than we are. Look for a doorway or...
Don't increase your pace. Play it easy. They want us to reach that street light up ahead.
That's why we better find a doorway here.
They'd have us like shooting fish in a barrel. Got to get inside one of those stores. It's our only chance for cover.
They're all locked. By the time we get a door open...
We can't use a door. Use your suitcase.
What do you mean?
Well, if they come to that light, they'll speed up. Just before they reach it, throw the suitcase through one of those store windows and get in after it. I'm the display lady.
Which store?
That big clothing store looks good.
Here they come.
Run for it. Throw the suitcase.
Come on, George, come on!
Behind the lid. Drop!
Capito! Spencer! You hear me?
We hear you.
I make my offer once more. You can't get out of there.
Maybe not, but you can't come in here either. Not unless you like to be dead.
Polizia!
Italian police.
Subito, subito!
Why don't you stick around and wait, Giovanni?
They're gone. Quick, grab the luggage and let's get out of here.
We don't have to run.
Well, if we're found here, we'll be held until our credentials are checked. That'll take time. And time is something we haven't got.
Well, a couple of hours.
Look, a couple of hours might be all the start Orlando needs.
What makes you think he's going to move that fast?
Giovanni makes me think so. He tried to knock us out too quickly. If he had time, he'd have waited for a better chance. We missed the police by inches and made the Hotel Vittoria just long enough to put our baggage in a room. If we were right about Orlando's move, there was no time for sleep. We knew he'd be living on the grand scale, so just before dawn, we hit the best of the produce markets and started to ask questions. Curto found an old man who knew all the answers.
Senor Orlando, he's a buy from me all the time. He's a big man.
Yeah. Real big success, we know.
You know where his house is?
Sure, I deliver. Deliver everything I got at the surplus. The jeep I buy from Stata Unita. It's your country.
Where's Orlando's place?
The palazzo. You know where's the church?
Which church?
Santo Spirito.
South of the city near Monte Pellegrino.
Si, that's the one. Orlando, he's living the palazzo. It's a big white palazzo after you pass the church. Why you ask about him? You know him from someplace?
Yes, we know him. We looked him up once back in the United States.
Huh? Yeah, for 6 years we looked him up.
Hey, you want to ride with me? I'm going to go by Orlando's palazzo.
What do you say, George?
Side curtains on this jeep, and it's something Orlando must be used to seeing. Better than driving past the place in a hired car.
Hey, you going to come?
Yeah, grazie. We'll come.
Si, andiamo.
Make deliveries this early in the morning?
Oh, no. You just take stuff to my store. Oh. I deliver later in the daytime. How long since you seen Signor Orlando,
A long time.
Back in the Stata Unita,
That's right.
You don't see him since the accident, huh?
What accident?
Oh, with the automobile. He's got accident.
When was this?
Two months ago.
Oh, he hurt badly?
No, I don't think so. Only his face. I see him walk around all with a bandage on the face. The first time I see him without the bandage, I don't know who was the same man. He's got no mark on the face. He's no scar, you know? He just look like different man.
That sounds like a plastic surgery job, Greta.
That's what it sounds like, all right. It was bad enough when we knew what he looked like.
What do you say? What's the matter?
Nothing. Just a little problem we've got here.
The new face isn't going to hurt his chances any when he tries to make his sneak.
We've got to know what he looks like now.
Hmm. If you want to see him, you go in the afternoon, after lunchtime. He's a sitting garden by the palazzo.
You'll have to pick up a camera someplace.
Fine. How do we get near him with it?
Well, there's a tarpaulin on the back of the jeep. We can throw it over a couple of crates, hide under it, shoot a picture without being seen.
We hope.
Hope or not, we've got to get that picture. It took a while before the old man agreed to help us. He didn't understand what we wanted or why we wanted it, and of course we couldn't tell him. Curto told him something in Italian that seemed to pave the way, and shortly afternoon of the same day, we were under a tarpaulin on the rear of the jeep when it stopped near the white palazzo.
There's nobody in the garden, George.
Thought the old man said Orlando was always there in the afternoon.
Well, he's wrong today.
Curto, we're too late.
Too late?
Throw the tarpaulin off.
How do you know we're too late? What do you see?
The house door is padlocked from the outside.
And the sneak is on, and we've lost it.
We've got to stop him.
George, he might be headed for any port in Europe by plane or ship. Which way do we go?
First, we've got to get into that house. Come on.
You think he might have left something behind? Something that might tell where he's headed?
If he didn't, we're finished. He could land at any one of 1,000 points in the United States. He's been planning this for a long time. Broke into the house, went through papers and files, desk drawers and closets. It looked like a hopeless case. And then we came across something.
George, hold it.
Find something?
Maybe. Here, take a look at this. A waste paper basket.
Copy of a cablegram.
Misspelled a couple of words, then crossed them out and wrote them correctly. Must have decided to make a whole new copy before I sent it.
Dated yesterday.
Yeah, it's a funny message, though. Meet me with Emerson when you get the word. Remember, Emerson. Monahan won't do. No signature.
He wouldn't send a cable to the States, not this kind. Who's it addressed to? Can you make it out?
No, it's been blurred.
Emerson or Monahan? Could be code names, of course. Or they just might be real. Some contact he expects help from.
Attorney, maybe. Somebody like that?
Well, it could be anything.
If that cable ever went through, the cable office should have a copy on file. We can get the addressee from them. Come on.
Well, if they've got it, we better place a transatlantic call to the chief in Washington.
That's exactly what I had in mind. He can check on the man who got that cable, and maybe there'll be something in the files on somebody in the rackets named Emerson or Monahan.
Mm.
We'll have to get back to the States ourselves on the next plane. Whatever plugging we can do now, we'll have to do at the home end.
I just had an idea.
What's that?
One thing Orlando will need is a clear passport.
Probably took Giovanni's and altered it. But I doubt if he'll try to use it to enter the States. He's got something better than that up his sleeve. Maybe a passport stolen or bought from some American stranded over here, Pat.
Wonder what the chief is going to say when he finds out that Orlando slipped through our hands.
He'll say what he always says. Find him. The cable had gone through all right. We got the address, a place in New York, and forwarded the information to headquarters. Then we boarded a plane for home. The chief met us when we came in at Idlewild Airport.
Well, the address on that cable was phony.
You mean it was never delivered?
No, it was delivered all right, but there's a vacant lot at the address.
Well, how could delivery be made to a vacant lot?
Messenger boy said there was a man waiting there when he came along looking for the house number.
Could the kid describe the man he gave it to?
Oh, vaguely. Not enough to help us. Came through at night. The street was dark. Oh, my car's out this way.
Well, how about those two names in the cablegram, Emerson and Monahan? Anything on those?
No, not a buzz. Nobody but those names ever associated with Orlando or his mob. Too bad we didn't get our tip a little earlier. If we had, I know you would have stopped it.
If he came in by plane, he's probably already cleared.
No, I've been watching the planes closely. We fingerprinted a few people we weren't sure of. Orlando will have the same fingerprints he had before. Now, here's the car.
Well, unless Orlando's on a boat headed this way, it looks like we're licked. Until we find him, I mean.
Now, we'll know he's here. Won't be hard to tell. We'll be seeing a lot more newspaper stories about white slavery and dope addiction. That's what we're letting ourselves in for if we get fastest. That's what I hate about it. Oh, come on, George. Come on. Snap out of it. Don't look so glum.
More than a week gone by. Liners coming and going. No sign of them.
Oh, there are still the tramp steamers, George.
Excuse me, Mr.
Tomato. Oh, yes.
I have those papers ready to sign.
No? Which one?
Permission for a private ambulance to pick up that polio patient after air rescue service brings her into the sea.
Oh, yes.
What's that about, Chief?
Oh, it's a girl stricken with polio on a tramp steamer 2 days out of Port of New York.
Going toward Europe or coming from there?
Coming from Europe. We have a few cases like this every year. If it's serious like this one seems to be, air rescue sends a seaplane out, picks the patient up, and rushes them in for hospitalization.
What hospital?
Well, that's up to them once we clear them for quick admission.
You mean they come right on through without a careful check?
Oh, George, you know that. If the passport's clear, of course. If somebody's critically ill, you don't want to make them wade through red tape.
Sure, sure. I'm sorry. I just got Orlando on the brain, I guess.
Well, relax. This polio patient's a girl. What is it?
I'm just wondering who made the diagnosis. Very few doctors on tramp steamers, Chief.
Yeah, very few is right.
And very few girls book passage on tramp steamers.
Has that pickup been made from the ship, I mean?
Yes, sir. I gave a verbal okay to Port of New York about 3 hours ago. They should be in from the return flight in about a half hour.
Where are they landing?
Bennett, that's where the ambulance will be waiting.
Hmm.
You don't want to change the order, do you?
Yes. When that rescue plane comes down to the field, have a department doctor there and a department ambulance. That patient ought to be thoroughly checked by us.
You sure you want it this way, George? I know it won't harm the patient any, but the patient is a girl.
I know how you feel about it, and if I thought this was a legitimate case, I'd feel the same way.
What's the matter? Why the strange look, George?
I just thought of something. Now I know I'm right.
Well, if you're that sure, let's have it.
That cablegram, remember? It said, meet me with Emerson when you get the word. Monahan won't do.
Well, you know what it means?
I know what the names mean. I just remembered. They're both names of respirators for polio victims. Manufacturer's names.
Oh, why, that's right, Mr. Tremaine. I remember seeing them during last year's polio fund drive.
They're both excellent respirators, but the Monahan is a smaller one. It just covers the chest and torso. That's why the cable said it wouldn't do. Orlando wanted the heavy, full-sized Emerson to give him a better cover, a better disguise.
Call Bennett Field right away, Miss Walsh. Tell our man there to get a departmental doctor on the field and wait for that rescue plane. Arrange transfer to a regular hospital if necessary, but the patient is not to be moved in that private ambulance.
Yes, sir.
Hiding behind a thing like that. Polio.
Using sympathy and a machine somebody's life might depend on to get back into the country and do more damage. That takes a real rat, George.
Well, isn't that what we've been looking for, Chief? A real rat?
Oh, thank you. This is it, George. Hello. Tremaine speaking. Ah, good. Fine. Keep him there. Yeah, good idea. I'm with that all the way. Goodbye. Well, that's it, fellow.
It was Orlando, then.
Yeah, it was him. Hale and hearty, too.
Well, we're not just going to deport him again, are we?
No, not just yet. We figure he's healthy enough to do about another 10 years on the rock, just to convince him. Then we'll deport him.
Now, can I go home now?
Yes. On the first plane. And thanks, George. It was a good job.
Well, that's what I'm paid for.
You satisfied?
Yeah. Yeah.
A man like Orlando with his mob could cost decent people millions of dollars in cash and heartaches. You stop him and what do you get?
No, I never thought about it.
No, really? I'd like to know.
Oh, I get a lot. Those decent people you spoke about, her friends and neighbors, my own family, cigarettes. Drive my own car, radio, bottle of beer. Maybe I've no imagination, but... You know, I can't think of anything else I especially want. Can you?
No. There isn't anything else. Well, give my love to Lillian and George Jr., huh? Now, go home.
This is Douglas Fairbanks again. The file case of the Big Sneak completes but another chapter in the distinguished chronicle of our silent men. The special agents of all branches of our federal government who daily risk their lives to protect the lives of all of us. Next week, we will tell you the story of our government's fight against illegal traffic in narcotics in the file case entitled The Empire of Pip the Blind, another venture undertaken for our protection by the silent men.
The Silent Men is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's case was written by Joel Murcott and transcribed in Hollywood. All names and places were fictional. Featured in tonight's cast were Georgia Ellis, Bill Conrad, Paul Dubov, Ted DeCorsia, and Ramsey Hill. Douglas Fairbanks may currently be seen starring in Mr. Drake's Duck.
Millions of innocent Koreans will die this coming winter unless you give your unneeded clothing today to the American Relief for Korea. That's ARK, A-R-K. Unless there are local collection agencies, please send your used clothing prepaid today to ARK, Oakland, California, or ARK, Massbeth, Long Island, New York.
Listen again next week and every week to other factual cases involving the law enforcement adventures of the special agents of our federal government, for they are the silent men.
Now it's the Jubilee Show on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from FBI and Peace and War, The Silent Men, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Our shoutcast stream is there, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed.